5:30 to 8:30. Again, that's this Monday at the Nonprofit Center, 89 South Street near South Station in Boston. For more information about the event and to RSVP, visit sojust.org, S-O-J-U-S-T.org.
The Massachusetts Save Our Homes Coalition will be protesting the federal budget cuts and corporate tax cheats. Where else? At Bank of America, 161 Cambridge Street in Boston, tomorrow at noon. As Congress prepares to pass a federal budget for 2012, we're being told that they need to make deep cuts to spending programs to keep our economy healthy. But huge corporations like Bank of America are paying no taxes at all. The Save Our Homes Coalition will be protesting at Bank of America, calling for new sources of revenue to fund programs for low and moderate income families. Tax the cheats, save our homes. This is sponsored by the Save Our Homes Coalition. It's tomorrow at noon at Bank of America, 161 Cambridge Street in Boston. If you'd like to RSVP, you should do that to the Mass Alliance of HUD Tenants at 617-267-2949.
And this weekend, volunteer librarians at the Library on Anti-Racism at Community Change, Inc. will continue leading a comprehensive inventory of its collection. They will be looking for errors in the catalog, determining subject areas in which to expand, and going through periodicals. They need volunteers to help complete the inventory. That's this Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. No previous experience is needed. If you can spare 2 hours or more, please email Myrna at library@communitychangeinc.org or visit the website communitychangeinc.org. Community Change Inc. is located at 14 Beacon Street, Boston, right across from the State House.
And residents of Madison Park Village, Orchard Gardens Estates, Interfaith Apartments, Ruggles Shawmut Apartments, and Schoolhouse Apartments are having a celebration and cookout next Saturday, June the 11th, from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. This is a kickoff celebration for the 45th anniversary of Madison Park Development Corporation, which works to build and preserve affordable housing, develop the leadership of tenants, and advocate for multicultural arts in Dudley Square, Roxbury. There's going to be food, music, field games, moon bounce, and other entertainment, and volunteers are needed to help with activities for children, youth, and adults during the afternoon. For more information, contact Kay at 617-849-6335. The cookout is next Saturday from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. in Dudley Square.
And this Sunday morning at the Community Church of Boston, the Sunday Speakers Forum presents Jim Rooney, president of Massachusetts Citizens Against the Death Penalty, the oldest active anti-death penalty organization in the country. The title of his talk is the Death Penalty Dead? The Sunday Forum is followed by a community luncheon. All are welcome. Program starts at noon this Sunday at the Community Church of Boston, 565 Boylston Street in Copley Square. Visit www.communitychurchofboston.org for more information or call 617-266-6710.
And one more quick thing, only because I don't know too much about it, but I saw an email that said there's going to be a protest tomorrow in solidarity with the Syrian uprising for freedom and democracy in Copley Square tomorrow, that's Saturday, from 3 to 5 p.m. I don't know who's sponsoring it, and that's all I know about it, but if you're in solidarity with the Syrian uprising, it's tomorrow in Copley Square from 3 to 5. We are out of time because the human beings, they are coming to present music, talk, and other activities that you should stay tuned for. The views and opinions expressed on this program have been those of the participants and not necessarily the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. Happy commencement, I believe, is in order to say. Please come back next week. We'll do it again. And, of course, stay tuned to all the fine programming here at WMBR Cambridge, where we are the leftmost station on your dial. Peace.
Sometimes only friendship can quench your thirst. Strange tonalities from seemingly another sphere. Sometimes I feel that I am miscategorized. Here to help categorize is Erno. Marhaban.
And isn't that what we all do with our lives, Doctor? Look at the world around us and categorize it. Isn't it the ultimate goal of human nature to understand that which is around us?
Does understanding truly come from coloring all of our experiences in a finite set of colors? I think it does. Aurora, won't you color with us?
Nothing would give me greater pleasure. And I must say that we as humans have no way to understand the world unless we filter all of our experiences, all of the nouns and verbs around us, into sharp, distinct categories. However untruthful they may be.
I don't know. It reminds me somewhat of the experiences I had in Los Alamos. Here also is Zorro. Zorro, marhaban.
Thank you, Doctor, for having me on the show, as usual.
Zorro, it is only our pleasure.
I think it is quite interesting, this contrast we have between categorizing the objects around us and the, you may consider, continuous nature of these things. For example, if we look at light and color, the relationship is because there are different cells which are sensitive in different ways to light. But the light itself is not coming in three different kinds.
And they are finite, and yet our perception is infinite. If you would like to take a finite thing and join us in infinite perception, dial these finite numbers, 617-253-8810. Marhaban, caller.
Hello, this is the Keeper of Sounds. It was very strange talking about continuing. I thought of you for the first time in weeks, Doctor, and here you are. And I was just hoping you well. And I just want to say that I've never heard anybody on the radio give so much respect to their listeners and treat them with such respect. And it is seemingly just that they respect you back.
Well, caller, and I would, you know, like to say that I feel that I have received perhaps more respect than I deserve, truly.
And caller, with such listeners, how can we but respect them all?
And without our listeners, we would only have a four-way monologue.
Yes, I think it is a central tenet of our platform that the listeners should be as strong as us.
May I just jump in and say that I've often thought that even when there's, let's say, not four, but maybe two, maybe just one person alone, they are somehow alone thinking these thoughts, but feel connected somehow to another person that may be halfway across the country?
Yes, caller.
Is it Is it possible for them to share something there without knowing it?
Of course, consciously? Of course, caller, it is very possible. We hold within ourselves mirrors of every person we have interacted with, every creature. They imprint us in some way. And so when we reach within ourselves and feel the presence of the other person, I do believe that that other person somehow feels you.
Yes, I can say for myself that if it were not possible to have this connection with the listeners, then I would not be interested.
I agree. I'm going to enjoy the rest of your show now, and I wish you all well.
Thank you so much, caller. I love this image of connecting outside, but so often I think it is valuable to take a moment and enjoy a multilog internally, to approach several parts of yourself.
And this brings to mind a question that I've had for a very long time. Now, I do believe that every individual, every creature that you meet, does touch you in some intangible yet tangible way. And so, when the noble alligator consumes his friend the duck, does this imprintation, is it deeper? Is it more lasting?
It really depends on the perspective. For the alligator, it is not lasting. He will just hunger for a duck again in 30 minutes to an hour. Whereas the duck, it is a pretty lasting interaction.
I am not quite clear in what you are contrasting this with. Is it lasting compared to is the interaction between two ducks or two alligators? I'm not sure what the opposite is.
No, well, if the alligator merely peers at the duck, communes with the duck, hangs out, so to speak, with the duck, does he feel the duck in a deeper way? Or if he actually consumes the physical and metaphysical essence of the duck?
I think that in all of us there is some aspect of duck-sistence, this being of duckhood.
Yes, I think that the stranger Martian perspective is that to consume is to understand.
Did you say the Martian perspective?
Yes, there is the stranger of a strange country, this novel.
I'm not familiar.
Perhaps it is too obscure, but it is a supposition, I think, of the novel. That in some language it makes sense to consume as to understand, and that it may be the same word, and this is a possible mode of thought.
And I also ask because I have been considering myself not as a single creature, but as a beautiful network of individual organisms, that every single cell in my body is another living creature, and we are all billions of us working together in order to consume other networks of living creatures. And so when I or an alligator consumes a duck, do not the cells of the duck become the cells of myself?
I see that in a very, very clear biological way. But what I wonder is it a form of worship, this changing of form? For example, when I see groups of people going to McDonald's, I see them consuming, yes, but becoming Ronald McDonald slowly. I think also in his largesse, in his generosity, in humor, it is a form of worship, of subscription to the belief.
There is certainly a link, I think, between the sacrifice and the worship.
Are you quite well, Dr. Charles?
Yeah, I'm not sure, actually, Aurora. The concept of a nation, indeed a planet of Ronald McDonald, it is, whether consciously or unconsciously I think this is actually happening.
I think that I have read that the population which has sustained the red coloring of the hair is actually in decrease, and that due to some genetic ways that it is expressed, it is not likely for the whole human race to become Ronald McDonald.
But Zorro, is this not a physicality when we wish to look into a deeper, more spiritual reflection?
Perhaps you may be correct on that line. I'm not sure, though, how it is to be spiritually Ronald McDonald.
Well, we must ask ourselves which features are the most important. Perhaps the red hair is not necessarily the most distinctive feature.
Perhaps the red lips.
Or perhaps the consumption of patties that consist of hundreds of animals at once.
I'm not sure if Ronald McDonald himself is a avid consumer of his own product.
Well, let's bring another voice into commune here with us. 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Marhaban, wonderful show.
Caller, it is made more wonderful by your voice.
Oh, thank you. It's a very nice day today.
It is. It is very beautiful. I just before the program began, I found myself several miles from the studio and was forced to lumber. And I think that is the right verb for someone of my portulence across Cambridge. And the onlookers were shocked, I think, to see me running in such a hefty manner, jangling and jingling with my various talismans and totems. But, you know, naturally the universe conspired and I arrived here on time.
And we're all thankful for that.
And none more than Aurora.
Yes, indeed.
Right. And we can all reach out and feel that and touch it and connect to it.
In a very real way, you are. I think I left quite a lot of myself all over Cambridge and Boston as I lumbered here.
Do you mean to say spiritually or physically?
No, I perspired most gustily.
So, both.
Well, speaking of Chub Rub, I was wondering exactly where Wendy fits into the equation, because, correct me if I'm wrong, doesn't she have red hair too?
Yes, I'm not sure of the genealogical link which there may be between these two mystical personas, but it may be there. Perhaps there is some insight.
From a potionological standpoint, the entities of Ronald McDonald and Wendy are in fact representative of the same spiritual awareness, the same spiritual being, so to speak. You have these potions, which we call sandwiches, or colloquially burgers, and it is only the outer form that changes. The substance is still the same. As Aurora said, the hundreds upon thousands of animals.
Well, they that's still the thing. I mean, I could totally see Ronald McDonald, like, taking a chainsaw to a cow, but I just don't think Wendy has it in her, you know? She's not that type
yes,
of person.
Yes,
now, caller, I must point out, though, that the most innocuous looking of women are often the most dangerous.
And it's also quite true that many people view square hamburgers to be better for you, but it's not necessarily the case. And this is really the essence of the difference between Wendy and Ronald.
Yeah,
it is just an outer form.
I'll tell you what.
Well, see, caller, you know, and I'm less familiar with these various sectarian differences, but it seems to me that of the two, Ronald has a larger number of, let us say, worshippers. So maybe it is true that the consumers are in agreement generally with you about this issue of the strength of the idol.
Yeah, the might. He's mighty.
Indeed, the power, the possibilities that a deity such as Ronald may grant.
I believe this is beautifully signified by his enormous shoes.
I take a
poor... Well, I have one more question. I'd like to take my answer off air, if you don't mind.
No, please.
But can somebody please tell me what exactly is Grimace? Thank you. I'm going to listen offline. Great show. Keep it up.
Thank you, caller.
I personally take an approach of pluralism to these food cults, if you will. I truly believe that whether Wendy, Ronald, or Grimace, they are all the different paths to the same summit, if you will.
I see that, but who is this Grimace?
I think the name Grimace, it comes from the facial expression, which is of elder origin, and in this expression is a traditional one which you may apply before to eat the sacred food. I think that the grimace is halfway between a smirk and a frown. And
this word I am familiar with, but the grimace, the person, the demigod.
Yes, I think that the grimace is in a way a personification of the practice of the grimace.
Perhaps he is a personification of the expression that your soul has as you eat this food.
I think that is very much in line with the color, which is Grimace's color is purple.
I've always felt purple to be such a soothing, beautiful color.
Yes, I quite agree.
So, if we may take an effort at answering the caller's question and also educating me about Grimace.
But the question he asks is, who is Grimace?
No, I believe, Aurora, if I may be bold and correct you, the caller asked a simpler question or perhaps a deeper question. Indeed, what is Grimace? His whatness, rather than the who-ness.
Well, I believe if we perhaps break this word down, we could glean a deeper understanding. This word grimace can be broken up into its syllables, grim and ace.
Grim, coming from the word grimoire, or a spell book, and ace, indicating quality of the highest and simultaneously lowest order, indicating a spellcaster of the highest level who has rediscovered the novelty that the novice spellcaster. This is ridiculous. It cannot be.
I think the ace is the high and the low piece. I think it is a sophomoric component to say that he is learning. He is not new, but he is still to learn some.
But does this not speak to the cleanliness and the power of purity?
And the purpleness of this spellcaster due to the nobility and the Latin origins of the order.
Precisely.
Erno, you've been silent on this topic. What are your theories regarding the who-ness and whatness of Grimace?
To be honest, Doctor, I was meditating on the questions as Aurora was speaking. And I must say, I think Grimace, the Grimace, or he, she, it, I'm not very sure. Grimace may perhaps represent the members of this food cult, those who are extremely religious about this food, who are the devout, if you will. Grimace represents what they become, both physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
And I'm also unfamiliar with this Grimace. What does his embodiment, his physicality?
I shall say, in my opinion, that he looks something like a grape popsicle.
Mm. So the producer has brought a description of Grimace that I may read, perhaps for learning. Grimace, it is written, is a large purple character who was first introduced in November 1971 as the evil Grimace.
I wonder why they initially thought him to be evil.
I'm not sure, actually. It says in his first two appearances, Grimace was depicted as two pairs of arms with which he stole milkshakes and soda. Hence, I think, the diabolicality of the Grimace.
I don't think... The reason this fell out of use, this idea of the Grimace as being evil, is I don't think it fits. It's ridiculous. Actually, you might as well have a burglar that steals hamburgers. It's absurd.
I believe that it can make some sense if you consider that at that time, that deity, Ronald McDonald, that those deities were attempting to procure more and more worshippers. And so they must give this creature to aid with some sort of struggle, because people are addicted to struggles, to the idea that they are being somewhat oppressed. So the idea that someone might attempt to steal these tiny burgers or milkshakes, perhaps that idea would make those burgers and milkshakes more dear.
In any case, the writings continue to describe Grimace as being difficult to describe physically, even for the other denizens of McDonald Land.
Please continue reading from the scriptures.
In the legend of Grimace Island, additional family were revealed. He has an unnamed mother, an unnamed father. So the details begin to emerge. His grandmother is named Winky. His great-great-grandmother, Jenny Grimace. And he is brothers, potentially, with King Gonga. Let's bring another voice in, perhaps with some insights into these mysteries. The number 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hello?
Welcome, caller.
Hello?
Caller, yes, marhaban. Welcome.
I was wondering what you have to say about the theory that the Hamburglar is just a facet of Ronald McDonald's subconscious.
I think that, as in many mythologies, again, my familiarity with this particular mythology is limited, but as in many mythologies, the prime deity, the king of the deities, is the prime mover, the creator of the other deities. So the concept of one being simply a mental manifestation of another is the same as this theory.
Yes, I think in my mind it is some possible origin, but it does not reflect on his future roles. And this I would liken to the birth of Athena from Zeus's brain, which is similar in my mind.
Hmm. I think always this is the power of creation, the power to take an idea and to create it. And we, as human beings, have a spark of this creative power, but only a shadow, because we take other creations and form them, whereas true creation would be to create from nothing.
All these creation myths, they all have this in common when you really think about it. You always have a character that is very similar to the Hamburglar. And I think, you know, the Hamburglar can be related to the proverbial serpent, the fallen angel, Loki, Lucifer, if you will. So the dark, it represents the dark side of human nature, while the character of Ronald represents what we aspire to be, and perhaps this sheds light onto the Grimace. The Grimace is us. in the mezzanine, in the middle area, with the choice, who do we become? Thus, Grimace is formless and undescribable because we haven't made the choice yet. We do not know what we are. We are thrown into this world without any knowledge of what we will become or what we will do.
So in a biblical sense, you would say that Grimace is as mankind.
Exactly. Grimace is us. We are Grimai.
And the reason then that Grimace is viewed as evil is similar to the inherent sin in the nature of mankind.
Yes, Grimace is not evil like the Hamburglar is evil. Grimace is fallen. He is imperfect. He is like us.
He is a wayward.
Thus, he starts out as evil and slowly becomes a good character who turns around. And
he has redeemed himself in his later actions.
Yes, becomes one with Ronald.
By sacrificing half of his arms, he becomes within reach of the rest of us. He shows his potential for goodness to not become a thief. Again, the traditional consequence of stealing is to lose one or both hands. And this indeed has happened to Grimace, to lose half of the hands.
Is this out of the scriptures you are reading, Doctor?
No, this is simply an interpretation, because they describe initially Grimace as having two pairs of arms, being described as evil.
Perhaps we should let another voice interpret these scriptures?
Indeed. 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Yes, and speaking of evil, we must consider the Hamburglar.
So the Hamburglar has been referred to many times. Caller, if you may introduce me to this character.
He is a striped character with black and white, depicting something unique and independent from Ronald or Mayor McCheese.
But also symbolizing the imprisoned, the criminal.
Oh, but maybe he is wrongly accused.
It is possible. Let's bring a...
For what is it that he has done, that he has been so defined, but to savor the lovely juices of the McCheese?
Juice savoring, I think, is a crime in many mythologies. Let's bring a sixth voice to join us.
Oh, I appreciate that, Sahib.
Stay with us. Callers.
No, I must go. I need the sustenance of McCheese.
Thank you, caller. Caller 7, marhaban. Are you with us, caller?
Yes.
Welcome.
I would like to straighten you out a little bit. You've
Please.
Been discussing in a very flat way about the difference between Wendy's flat square burgers and Ronald's round burgers, but there's a whole other level to this spiritual discussion. I know it's a mystery, but...
Please enlighten us, caller.
In the land of the flat, yes, I will, thank you. You can call me Swami Salami. In the land of meatball, then these flatlanders are just like pawns. And the meatball is the true way.
So this introduction of depth, of the third dimension, is all-encompassing.
And yet,
yes,
caller...
meatball is the great oneness.
May I point out to you that the flatlanders can only see in two dimensions. They cannot perceive the third dimension, and do not many, many theologies require a degree of faith from its followers. So perhaps this flatness, this lack of dimensionality...
Is a test?
Is a test.
That may be true. There are actually infinite dimensions, of course, and that's where the spaghetti comes in and all the other... shapes of pasta.
But see, caller, I wonder if the flatlanders worship the meatball. Would not the meatballs worship a hyper meatball in four dimensions?
That's very good. I I can see that. I think that's why being very corpulent is actually close to godliness.
I felt this way until I ran here.
So what I would like to know is then, what is the utmost food that can lift us beyond this kind of conceptual hang-up about different dimensions and shapes, where we really can experience great bliss here and now?
Well, Color, I can answer this for myself. I believe this is a question that you must reach into yourself and find. But for me, it is any food which can be blended. For I find that breaking up the shape of the food and allowing it to form a sort of soup transcends the dimensions.
Because it can fill any container.
Exactly.
That is interesting. I think I would contrast this with the ability to make an interesting structure out of a food and then in the act of consuming destroy such a structure. So come like a gingerbread house which is very elaborate or something of the sort.
Well, for myself, a non-orientable food is the best food because it is it contains no volume. So Klein bottle pasta, if it can be created, I would love this. And it's, I think, ideal for a diet, for the dieting topologist.
Would that be a macaroni or a spaghetti?
I'm not sure, actually. But in any case, I think semolina is the ideal material with which to construct non-orientable food.
It seems to me to be cousin of the tortellini.
Indeed, except the tortellini would contain a filling, and this non-orientable pasta,
yes,
it would contain the entire universe.
They are not the same exactly, but it is similar.
So the two views, I think, dealing with optimism and pessimism when it comes to non-orientable pasta, is it empty or does it contain everything?
Well, again, let me enlighten you. Because I'm the most humble corpulence, that I think mashed potatoes is probably the ultimate similitude of oneness. In fact, it occurs to me that a wonderful young sculptor named Maya Lin, when she was in college, she made the model for the Vietnam Memorial, the wall, underground wall, the negative image of grief in Washington, D.C., out of a very, very large table-shaped batch of mashed potatoes. And I think mashed potatoes demonstrates the oneness in the manyness and the manyness in the one that's beyond eater and being eaten.
Now, Color, this food of yours, I might point out, if you were able to construct mashed potatoes into the shape of a non-orientable object, then you would fulfill all three requirements.
Because like Aurora's liquid foods, mashed potatoes possesses the quality to take on new shapes, but also to hold a shape, which I think is unique, and I think that's a great point that the caller brings. Caller, stay with us. Let's bring in another voice to join.
One more thing. Mashed potatoes are white, which is obviously a superior color, as everybody, all wrong-headed thinkers know.
But because it can be colored to other colors. Let's bring in another voice. Stay with us, caller.
Okay. Thank you.
Caller 8, marhaban.
Yes, this is Richard Dreyfuss, and I will remind you that I used mashed potatoes to chart out my vision of a certain crusted butt in the Midwest. And also other sculptors who have played with their food might include architect I.M. Pei, who, when designing the Boston Hancock Tower, was seen in very expensive restaurants playing with sheets of ice and carrot sticks and lots of celery. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Connor.
That is interesting. I'm not sure what's the relationship between Crested Butte and the mashed potatoes is.
Well, I'm not sure what the question the caller had was.
Again, from a potionological standpoint, having food that could take on any shape gives it more versatility.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
It can become a component in potions that can do more than one thing. For instance, mashed potatoes alone with gravy can do one thing for the soul, but mashed potatoes put into gingerbread molds is a completely, that's almost like potato cannibalism because they're shaped like people.
That's interesting. The other piece that you are mentioning is that the mashed potato is formless, but also represents in this way a potential.
Just like the grimace.
Let's bring in another voice.
Well, then maybe water is the ultimate spiritual food.
I would like to know what you think about the essence of ginger and how it affects the thought process of the human mind on an acidic level.
On an acidic level?
Ginger and how it...
Now, caller, this is an excellent question. I find that when I am creating a stir fry, I usually do so with hints of acidity and hints of ginger. But usually in the production process, I consume large quantities of raw ginger root and raw lemon together.
On the contrary, I actually think that the way ginger affects the human mind is not really complicated at all. It's actually very basic.
Yes, I see. And yet I believe that the acidity allows greater absorption.
Absolutely. I'm not sure why acidity in particular, but certainly it can give a sweetness to the food. Let's bring in another voice. Caller 18, marhaban.
Marhaban.
Welcome, caller.
I would just like to say that you guys are making me hungry. What are you having for dinner tonight?
Well, caller, I usually like to have a nice piece of fish after the program. Because it is. Because we live.
Can I say hello to my friend Brett? He likes to ask it. Hi, Brett.
And what is Brett consuming tonight?
Okay, have a good dinner. Bye-bye.
Thank you, caller. It's interesting to think about consumption. Yet, to me, the fish is nice. But it is so much nicer the moment when I am empty and I first put that first small piece of fish into my mouth. That is the best moment. The moment later when I'm full and I have to pay for the fish or run away is much, much less enjoyable.
I find that this depends on the quality of the food and the price, of course. Mm-hmm. But as I often... currently, I'm consuming only mixed berries and raw walnuts and almonds. That is all that I am consuming for the next week or so. And so I find that when I am finished with my meal, that is the time when I am at greatest peace.
I personally have been living entirely off of condiments.
It's such an interesting thought because it's all about decorating the food, but there being no food. A sandwich with no contents, only bread. Let's bring in another voice. 617-253-8810. Callers, we would love to hear. Marhaban. And again, the caller is breathing without speaking. So many
and
people.
Feeling
is
and
all
thinking.
Well, caller.
So the caller is breathing without feeling or thinking.
And being.
And is speaking without thinking.
And doing. And peeing. And doo-doo. Da-da-da.
This is a beautiful moment, caller, because it is interesting to think. I think the caller is saying here that we are talking about consumption, but voiding is an important secondary process. Mm. What form of worship does voiding promise us?
That is an interesting question. I do not mean to sidetrack, but I simply wish to note that it seems quite arduous to consume a sandwich which is made entirely of condiments.
Mm.
It seems to me that there is a lot of discipline which must go into a practice like this because of the necessary preparation.
Mm. But you're looking at it from the perspective of someone who doesn't like condiments.
No, I think that the point Zorro is bringing up is the mechanical difficulty of constructing a sandwich from pieces which are mostly not rigid.
It's easier to make a stew or a salad, if you will.
Mm. Let's for a moment meditate on this point. The point.
So refreshing.
I definitely found it refreshing. Caller, do we still have a caller with us? I think we lost that caller. So that means we have two lines available and about 10 minutes left. If anyone would like to jump in and tell us your theories, 617-253-8810.
Now, I would like to go back to one of my questions at the beginning of the show. If an alligator were to consume Ronald McDonald, would that be the end of him, or just the beginning?
Let's get an opinion from a caller. Again, 617-253-8810. Caller, marhaban.
Hey.
Welcome, caller. Hey to you.
Thank you. How many drugs is everyone on right now in that studio?
That is a wonderful question, caller, for we do not understand all of the things that we consume, and we do not perceive their noticeable changes in ourselves.
So, Aurora, what you are saying is that earlier today when I ate a raw potato, that now it is converted into a sugar which is rushing through my body like a drug. And caller, please, if you could turn down that radio.
Sorry.
No.
Yes, when you really think about it, there are so many things we consume and interact with on a daily basis, and anything can really fit the definition of drug. I mean, we could, depending on how you look at it, you could be on zero drugs or a million at the same time.
Even it's, light, it's, even sound.
I yes. have found oftentimes that a smile from the stranger is one of the headiest drugs that I could know.
I once fell off of a bridge because someone smiled at me too directly.
Ah.
Hmm.
Caller, what drugs are you on?
None. I'm just imagining someone listening to your program not high and what that would be like. Thank you.
So you are stepping outside of yourself and looking in. I understand many drugs can do that.
I would say it's impossible. Because we are always high on each other's voices on this show.
I like that image. So even just listening for a moment, one becomes tall, one becomes long and high.
And giddy.
See, I think it is
voluminous.
Interesting to consider the various state of mind that we put ourselves in to have this show. I myself meditate to become more contemplative and reflective. And in a way, I take my mind and I tell it to be more of a reaction, of a reactive, absorb the information which is coming from the callers and from the other hosts. So I think that the meditative practices, which at least I personally undergo in preparation for the show, may in fact constitute an altered state of consciousness.
I agree 100% with this, and oftentimes I must soothe both my mind and my body.
Mm. Mm. As a potionologist, I like to spend some solitary time alone with the potions I work with, I lose my mind with my work and become free. And this is how I prepare for the show.
So wonderful. I, you know, when I was a youth, I believed that when people were praying, what they were actually doing was smelling their hands. So I think that it would be great if we took a moment now and all of us just smell our hands and let's see what we find there. What lifetime we experience? Where does this drug that is our own hand, where does that take us? Because for me, yeah, when I smell that hand, it reminds me that I was on the tea earlier today. In that way, taking that moment and remembering sitting on the tea, the vibrations, being with other people, other stranger people, or normaler, less exciting people, was a prayer in a way. So, and Zorro seems to be really taking a deep breath there. Zorro, what have you found after much searching?
I am afraid that I have searched quite hard and cannot find anything. Perhaps I may borrow your hand and engage after the show.
Certainly, Zorro, you are welcome, of course, to smell my repulsive hands. Erno, perhaps you could share with us the flavors that are on the Potion Master's hands.
As you can imagine, Doctor, the smells are quite complex. My hands... my work is with my hands, essentially. But the leading smell, the most overpowering smell I smell at the moment... I'm sorry, you did run in here today, Doctor. I really can't focus on my hands with the aroma that you have brought into the room.
Mm-hmm. The ambrosia. Aurora, perhaps with your proboscis, you are able to narrow down and focus to smaller.
Yes, and I believe it also aids to close one's eyes and just immerse yourself. And I find the smells on my hands are blueberries, mangoes, and cilantro.
Mm-hmm. And that is because?
Because I was consuming blueberries and mangoes, and I hugged a man who was consuming cilantro.
So you were eating these things, and then they found their way from your stomach back into your hands.
Well, it depends on your perspective on time, I believe.
I have often known people that they consume too much garlic, and they smell like garlic everywhere. Even their hair becomes the color of garlic.
It's a spiritual immersion to consume in such a fragrant substance.
There is this phrase, it is sometimes taken metaphorically, but I think it is true on a more literal level than people imagine sometimes. The phrase is, you are that what you eat.
Indeed, and indeed, I think this is a great, great summary of what we've been discussing here, because the nose, this tool of smelling, which seems so delicate and is easily damaged by a strike in the right place or smelling certain chemicals, is directly linked to the hippocampus of the brain, a horseshoe of memories.
I would also say and generalize that not only are we are what we eat, but more spiritually, we are what we seek, and to consume is to find. I believe
that is such a beautiful thought, and that resonates with me so much deeper than some purely physical idea.
And I just like for a moment to think of a dream in which I experienced a smell.
And that is something which I've contemplated for myself, and I have come to the conclusion which I do not smell in a dream and I do not taste in a dream. It is kind of disconcerting for me to realize this in retrospect. I am quite aware that I can see and that I may hear and that I may feel during the process, but I am not sure. I cannot find any time that I have done the other with the smell and the taste.
Well, I think maybe we will take one very, very quick call and end the show. Caller, marhaban.
Hello, caller.
Hello.
Well, welcome, caller.
Is this radio station for real?
This is WMBR 88.1 Cambridge.
Yes, I
very
think
much real.
Is it coming from a place other than your radio?
No, it's coming straight from my radio.
And caller, you have come straight into our radio. But unfortunately, we are just ending. We are out of time.
I really would like to hear about you being a potionologist.
Well, caller, we are here every Friday night at 7 p.m.
All right, I look forward to it.
Thank you, caller.
As do we.
And thanks to you, Aurora.
Namaste.
Thank you, Erno.
Thank you, Doctor.
And thank you, Zora.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, of course, to all the listeners out there. And I'm very sorry to those callers which we were not able to get to tonight.
I'm Addictor Jalis Sakran here on Music for Human, New Age Talk Radio, with an emphasis on you. We are here every Friday at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'asalam.
Safety.
Number one.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Good evening, Boston, Cambridge, whoever may be listening. You are listening to WMBR 88.1.